Hi, Bridget.
Okay, well, I'm going to give you a rundown who's on the phone.
Okay.
So you know. So we have Dan Catt, Nathaniel Odell, Rick Eitzed, Richard Stevens, Kip Hill Reporter, Mike Piccolo, Brian McClatchy, Craig Keller, and Del Wilcox and Sarah Weiberg will not be joining us.
Okay, so I'm only going to acknowledge the ones who are representing the parties.
That's correct.
I hope that's okay, everybody.
The rest is, and Kip Hill, you know, everyone else is just going to be quiet. So it's all you have to acknowledge.
Okay, I think
so
I'm
you ready.
Yes.
Here goes.
Good afternoon, Council.
Good afternoon, Commissioner.
The hearing this afternoon is for argument in Global Neighborhood versus Respect Washington. It's our number 355284, and it's before the court on Respect Washington's motion for a stay of the Superior Court's decision pending this appeal. For the record, I want to state that this hearing is being recorded. Generally, each party has 10 minutes for argument, but here we have more than two parties. The city is represented by Mr. Odell, and the county is represented by Mr. Catt, and both have filed responses to the motion. Have you all discussed if you all will argue and how much time you expect your arguments will take?
This is Dan Catt with the county.
Uh-huh.
I have not discussed the timing with anyone, but the purpose of our briefing was to provide information concerning the nature of what the auditor would need, depending upon what the what you ruled on this. So I'm quite comfortable resting on just the brief. I don't need to argue unless you have any questions up.
All right, Mr. Odell.
And you know, I was going to say the same thing as Mr. Catt. The city's position is set forth in its papers. I'd be happy to answer any questions, but I don't anticipate needing to say anything specifically.
Okay, well then we can go forward. Mr. Stevens, you'll go first since it's your motion. Do you want to reserve any of your 10 minutes for rebuttal?
No, Your Honor.
Okay.
I think I can best just do it all in one shot.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you for this emergency motion, emergency hearing. I appreciate accommodating my schedule. I'd like to first deal with the plaintiff's argument that Judge McKay did not issue an injunction. And the court does not have the complaint in this case in which the prayer includes a request for enjoining placement of the initiative on the November 2017 ballot. But the court does have the order, and the order is very clear in the second to the last sentence that the court directs the auditor not to include it, referring to the initiative, on that ballot. Although it doesn't use the word injunction, it acts in all ways like an injunction. Second, I'd like to address the issues for a stay, and one of the arguments made was that we were relying on old law that would indicate that a mandatory injunction should be stayed as a matter of right while the matter is on appeal. And even though that comes out of old law, there's a more recent decision that uses that same language and cites the case that we cite. It's called Board of Regents of the University of Washington versus Seattle, and it's a 1987 decision. 108 Washington 2nd 545. That's still the rule, and it's consistent with RAP 8.13, which is what really applies here. And the standard is, well, are there debatable issues, and is there a comparison of harm that would justify the stay? And as to whether there are debatable issues, I would contend that the two issues on which Judge McKay issued her ruling are clearly debatable. The first one, which shows up in paragraph 6 of her order, is whether or not Proposition 1 is moot simply because the council, after referring this to the ballot, decided to move the sections that were being amended by the initiative to different titles within the code. And the plaintiffs and the court below, I think, relied on the Hooza case from the 60s, and which would suggest that if your initiative is amending something that has changed, too bad. But as we note, the Supreme Court more recently in Citizens for Financially Responsible Government versus Spokane, a case from the 1980s, the court said, we find the dissent in Hooza to be more persuasive. We think it's inappropriate for a city council to move the language around so that a proposed initiative no longer refers to the right sections or to the law as it was when the initiative petitions were being circulated. So I think this issue is more than debatable. I think the Supreme Court has more recently spoken, indicating that this initiative should not be considered moot. And here's the other reason that was completely not mentioned in Judge McKay's decision, and that is Section 3 of the initiative is a completely new section. It can't be moot. There isn't a case where it's not a situation where the code section changed from one section to another, as is true with Sections 1 and 2. But Section 3 is completely new language, and it cannot be moot. And again, the trial court has not even made any mention of that in the order. The second decision, which I think is debatable, is the administrative versus legislative characterization. And the trial court concluded that Proposition 1 was administrative. But the Supreme Court, in the cases we cited, indicated this is a difficult determination to make on a case-by-case basis. And the question is whether or not the initiative language is adopting new policy or carrying out policy already in existence. And I think it's pretty clear that Proposition 1 is proposing to adopt a new policy. Whether that's a good policy or a bad policy, whether that's a good idea or bad, is something for the voters to decide. But we believe our appeal is strong that this is not merely carrying out an existing policy, which is the standard that the Supreme Court set. In terms of the comparison of injury, our contention is that the plaintiffs are not injured in simply having the election. They have alleged and put in evidence that they would be injured if the initiative were passed and implemented. But our contention is that merely voting on the matter is not an injury to the plaintiffs. And the injury to my client is my client collected signatures years and years ago. People signed this petition in 2015, and if it doesn't go on the 2017 ballot, it doesn't go on for another 2 years, the 2017 ballot. Excuse me, the 2019 ballot. And I believe it was the city, the city who argued that, well, the council can always refer this to the voters at some other time or a special election. And I think the court needs to be aware that the charter is very specific, and the charter is controlling in this case because the initiative process is established by charter, that it has to be at a general municipal election. And RCW 29A04330 declares that a general municipal election is the November election in odd number years. And the reference to the fact that the council can refer matters to the voters on their own without a petition on special elections does not apply to this one. Wish it would apply, but unfortunately it does not. And then finally, the city has argued that that a bond should be placed to cover the cost of the election if it turns out the appeal is unsuccessful. And I think it is, there are two things that I'd like to say in regard to that. One is that the city was not seeking any relief below to avoid having those election costs. It was willing to do so. But more importantly, it hasn't submitted evidence of what that cost would be. And we contend that that cost must be slight in light of the fact that there is another initiative on the ballot. This, there is going to be an election in November. Other initiatives, other city initiatives are on the ballot. And what the incremental cost is, it would just be a mere guess as to what that would be. And then finally, we appreciate the county's or the auditor's argument about what the court would really need to do to make sure this remains on the ballot. We're asking the court to stay the Superior Court decision, and that decision was that Proposition 1 is invalid and shall not be placed on the ballot, and we would expect the auditor to place Proposition 1 on the ballot, and that we wouldn't need some separate emergency motion to force them to do so if, in fact, as we've asked, the trial court decision is stayed pending appeal.
All right. I think
you're happy to answer any questions.
Okay. I think you have about 1 minute left if you want to use that for rebuttal.
Sure.
Okay. Mr. Eichstadt.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll try to address the points in order. First, as I pointed out in our briefs, there's two rules of appellate procedure that govern stays, 8.1 and 8.3. Both of them, except in situations involving real property, money, judgments, intellectual property, etc., are issued solely as a matter of discretion. Opposing counsel cites 8.1, the test there. However, in the case of Boeing Corporation, 43 Washington Ave at 291, which is cited in our brief, the court makes it clear that 8.3 is the governing requirement for an injunction. But that gets to a fundamental point. I don't know. They don't state what their authority is for seeking this stay. Nowhere in there is it stated. Are we seeking one under 8.1 or 8.3? This is the first I've heard. And now they summarily kind of gloss across the point that, you know, they're calling this injunctive relief. If you look at our motion, which again, we have the disadvantage of not having the full record before this court, we filed a motion pursuant to Washington's Uniform Declaratory Judgment Act. No place in our motion did we request an injunction. No place in the court's order is there anything about an injunction. In fact, paragraph 1 said this matter was brought pursuant to Washington's Uniform Declaratory Judgments Act and meets the elements thereof, and then declares that it's invalid and declares that it should not appear on the ballot. So it is not in any way an injunction. That's important in a couple ways. One, the standard for showing injury is much different and much more relaxed in a declaratory judgment action, as well as whether or not a stay is a matter of right. The opposing counsel talks about their injuries and states that they're going to be injured because they have expended time and resources. Again, in the declarations that are actually included in our brief, we submitted extensive briefing or extensive declarations and information that they, in fact, are not running a campaign. They have not disclosed to the Public Disclosure Commission that they have spent any money on this campaign. If you look at our appendix, beginning with the declaration at 87, as well as the attachments thereto, they simply are not spending money. They are not running a campaign to support this. Moreover, they state that my clients will not be injured because there's no injury simply by having an election. And again, that ignores the case law that comes out of Spokane. Spokane Entrepreneurial Center states, we have allowed petitioners to show that they will suffer an injury in fact if the law were allowed to pass. So we don't have to demonstrate that simply having an injury, or excuse me, simply having the election is going to cause an injury. It's the fact that if it passes, and certainly if a stay is granted and it's put on the ballot and it passes, there will be some time before this court ultimately makes a decision, subjecting my clients to potential injury. In the briefing, they also talk about injury to their constitutional rights. And this ignores Washington case law in three ways. First, the Supreme Court has repeatedly recognized that constitutional interests at a local initiative don't exist in the same manner that they do for a statewide initiative. Second, Washington courts over and over again have invalidated petitions that exceed the scope of the initiative power or otherwise invalid. So they have not found that there's any constitutional right to bring an invalid initiative. Third, and this is exactly on point to what they argue, in the City of Longview versus Wallen, the Court of Appeals rejected the First Amendment freedom of speech and freedom or a petition power, stating it appears that in that case the plaintiff asserts the First Amendment right to have any initiative, regardless of whether it is outside the scope of the initiative power placed on the ballot. But he has failed to articulate a basis in law for this right when the protected political speech obtaining signatures for the petition was not impaired. Accordingly, Wallen's First Amendment claim fails. So the court says you have a protected right to obtain signatures. You don't have the right to actually have it put to a vote, particularly in the case if it's invalid. Whether or not this matters administrative or not, certainly, you know, that there was debate before the Superior Court. We think the Superior Court's decision is well-founded. As the Superior Court noted, this gets into the minutiae of how the city would govern its employees, how it would govern its police. There are existing administrative policies. The initiative seeks to change just a few words, add a few sections. It doesn't seek to add an entire new program or plan like has been discussed. And in fact, the courts have said a local government action is administrative if it furthers or hinders a plan the local government or some power superior to it has previously adopted. That's exactly what this would do. If you look at Proposition 1, it strikes certain sections, it adds a limited amount of language. This is not an entirely new program or plan like is anticipated as a legislative action. This is certainly administrative in nature and goes to the minutiae of how city employees are doing their job. The court was correct in concluding that it was moot, and it was also would create a absurd result if you were trying to line up what the council had passed with what Proposition 1 would do. I would refer the court to page 140, which is the very last page of our appendix. In the left-hand column are the changes that Proposition 1 proposes to add and delete from the municipal code. In section 040, striking the word citizenship status. In section 050, it's striking entirely that section and adding a new section 060. both 040 and 050 were rescinded by the Spokane City Council. They were added back to a section, a new Title 18, and additional language was added. In 030, immigration status and refugee status was added. In 020, the word agent was added to A, citizenship status to both B and C. And a new section, 010, was added that included a section that said police officers and agents, officers, employees, and other commissioned, others commissioned by the police department are prohibited from engaging in profiling. That's directly inconsistent with their added 060. During our oral ruling, the judge said this makes these sections, I think the term she used was, it wasn't doable to use both Proposition 1 and the new Title 18. So not only did she find it was moot, consistent with HUSA, but she also found that it would create a absurd result, which the canons of construction certainly discourage in its application. The respondents certainly have established their injury. Again, it is not an injunctive relief standard that you look to. It's looking to the declaratory judgment where Spokane Entrepreneurial Center said petitioners must show injury in fact, economic or otherwise. It's a much reduced standard. There are extensive evidence declarations that indicate that Proposition 1 will subject immigrants to profiling, increase fear and reluctance on the part of crime victims to seek assistance from law enforcement, and present challenges to integrating immigrants to the community. Granting a stay now would require that respondents endure a period of injury while waiting for relief. Lastly, and we would concur with the City of Spokane, they have not demonstrated any injury by simply waiting for the next election. The record demonstrates they already had to do that. There were some errors with their signature collection. They had to wait 2 years, waiting more time, particularly in light of the fact that they have expended no resources to see this through, certainly will provide no injury, particularly when viewed in light of the potential injury to my clients. For all these reasons, Your Honor, we would ask that you deny this stay.
All right, and Mr. Stevens, you have a couple minutes for rebuttal if you want to use it.
Thank you. So I would just direct the commissioner's attention to the court order. It says the court directs the auditor not to include it on the ballot. And I think that sounds an awful lot like an injunction. It doesn't use the word enjoin. It doesn't say this is an injunction. But it's not just a court order declaring something. It is directing. And that is the very nature of an injunction. On the harm issue, and I think we made this clear in our brief, I understand that the plaintiffs below and respondents here have alleged injury enough to get standing to get into the court, to get the court to issue a decision. But that is not the same standard for getting an injunction. And I think respondents recognize that. They argue that all they need to show is the lower standing level injury. But again, we think an injunction has in fact been issued. The auditor is acting as if an injunction has been issued. The auditor indicated that she would not remove it from the ballot unless ordered to do so. So I think the respondents need to be able to show, and haven't, that having an election is going to be harmful. They've suggested that, before the court could ever do anything about it, if the measure passes, their clients would be subjected to harm, potentially. We're just assuming, one, that it passes, and two, assuming that the court can't relieve anybody from any injury that might, in fact, happen. As to, I don't think there's anything else to say about mootness. The Supreme Court has rejected the Hoosa analysis. In terms of administrative, I think the court should be aware that the Supreme Court has said this is always a difficult decision, and this the standard is this a debatable issue? And I would contend there's no requirement that in order to be legislated, it has to be a new plan or a new program. It simply has to be a new policy. And in fact, I think as Judge McKay recognized, this was a new policy. In fact, it would conflict with an existing policy. But the establishment of a new policy is exactly what legislative action is, and not all legislative action has to be grandiose. Even the addition of an additional section, the new section, is a legislative act, and it's at least debatable to that effect, and that an, this injunction should, in fact, be stayed.
All right. Well, this is a lot to digest. I intend to get the ruling out on this tomorrow. I will guarantee, however, that I'll have it out by Tuesday by 9 a.m. Thank you all for your, or both for your arguments, and you will hear from us soon.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you.
Thank you.